It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And this is Barnett Bain with my substitute co-host, Freeman Michaels, is away on vacation. I'm sitting in for him, filling his considerable shoes, is my very considerable co-host, Sandy Stewart.
Hi.
And I'm so happy that you're here with us today, Sandy. Sandy and I go back for many, many, many years. We've been very close for 32 years-ish, right? Is that right?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell our folks how we came to meet? How did we come to connect with each other? I think I met you at a party someplace, right?
And you did meet me at a party.
It was one very fragrant, jasmine-filled night in the Hollywood Hills. I had been in Los Angeles from New York. I had just moved. I'd lived there all of 2 days. I went to a party. And I know this story is not going where people think
it's going. Well, and I went to a party very reluctantly. I went to a party.
You did?
Yeah, it was one of those parties where...
You were in a big relationship at the time, weren't you?
Well, I was getting out of a big relationship for a long time.
Really big relationship, right?
Yeah.
That's it.
Let's not go there.
All right,
We're going to go forward in time. Back in time to go forward in time.
Let's not go back.
Yeah, and I reluctantly went to this party thinking I should go to this party. I should meet new people. I should change my life. And I did.
Yeah, I went there.
And you were.
Looking for to meet hot people.
And
I met you.
Yeah.
And the next day, I went to dinner with Sandy. Mm-hmm. We had dinner around 5 o'clock, and by around 11:30 we were living together.
Oh, no, it was 12:05.
It was 12:05.
It was like the second day we were living together.
It was 12:05. Yeah. It was a technical.
It's like it was technical.
After the stroke of midnight, and we have been
but
together.
But that is true. You came to my house for dinner and never left.
And that we've been together ever since. Mm-hmm. 32 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And I can't even cook.
I think I'm going to stay. Yeah,
I can't even cook, so that's pretty amazing.
That's for sure. But you have learned to do 2 or 3 recipes.
I have.
You
yeah.
do a wonderful store-bought chicken. No, you do a wonderful chicken.
Thank you.
If I was a chicken, I would be proud to be done by you. Instead, I'm your husband, and I'm proud to be done by you. So it's great to have you here, because we don't get to speak enough at home, so it's
right.
good to have you speak with me at work, too.
Yeah.
There's something that came up that I want to talk to you about, Sam. I want your input on. Something, a little news item that I saw. And I want to share it with everybody. This is so poignant. There is a famous matador, Torero Alvaro Munera. And this man realized in the middle of his last fight, he says, and I'm going to read this quote, "And suddenly I looked at the bull. He had this innocence that all animals have in their eyes, and he just looked at me with this pleading. It was like a cry for justice deep down inside of me. I describe it as being like a prayer, because if one confesses, it's hoped that one is forgiven." He stared into the eyes of this bull and he says, "I felt like the worst," I don't know if I can say this on the air, "the worst on earth." And this matador went to the side of the arena and sat down with his cape draped over his lap. And in the middle of that, from that day forward, he became an opponent of bullfights.
Oh.
So I am really struck by that. And at the surface level, first of all, I'm very struck by the obvious courage and the obvious compassion of such an act. But drilling down below the surface of it a little bit, I would like to think that I am capable of such an act of self-knowing and compassion, and that I have the capacity and the courage. Well, I know I have the capacity, but that I am capable of acting upon it. To so deeply see myself and my patterns and to put my foot on the clutch. and to make a set of new choices that fly in the face of the life that I built. So here's Barry Bordoff. Is that a phone? So here is a here's a man who has built a, he's a rock star in his native country. He has stadiums filled to capacity with people that come to see him do his thing. Mm-hmm. And he has power and status and success. Everything that that in the way of the world that human beings motivate most human beings. I won't say all, but most, many. Mm-hmm. And he made this fundamental shift in front of this packed stadium of
witnesses,
all of whom paid handsomely to see him do his thing, and he renounced it. What that takes is stunning. It's stunning to me. It's one thing to make a small change in private. It's another one to pull the rug out from under your life in front of all of the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. In it. What do you think of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that comes to mind, and you said the word, is compassion. And as you read his words, I could feel the compassion he had in those eyes of the bull.
Yeah.
That he felt looking into the eyes of the bull. And it was almost like I picture him having this first conscious moment where he's conscious,
mm-hmm.
and because of his consciousness, he sees what's looking back at him.
Mm-hmm.
And what's looking back at him is the mirror, is the reflection of the compassion that maybe he never felt for himself. But mm-hmm. in that moment, he had to feel it, or he wouldn't have been able to feel it for the bull.
Yeah.
And to be able to have the courage to act on that self-love, and therefore love of other,
yeah.
the bull in this case, is what integrity is. It's when you bring something to consciousness, and character, when you bring something to consciousness, and you now know something, if you don't act on it, you have no character.
Well, we have in our society this kind of disconnect between our values, that at least our espoused values. I am a religious person, or I am a loyal or faithful wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, teacher. I am an ethical business person. We have our espoused values. I am a family man. And then we have our expressed values. I say that I am, for example, an ethical business person, and maybe I am willing to go fast and loose on my taxes, mm-hmm. or I'm, people know where I'm going with this. So there is this disconnect between the values that we live by and the values
yeah.
that we espouse, and I think that the degree to which we live in alignment with our values is the measure of our character, is the definition of our character. Our character is the degree to which our espoused values line up with our real
right.
values. So
right.
What I hear you saying is, here's a guy whose character showed through, and it's so inspiring to
right.
see a human being in their character. But what over and above the inspiration of it, what unsettles me a little bit is, what inspires and unsettles me is the courage that it takes to bust out. This is like a rocket ship taking off and blowing out of Earth orbit. To blow out past the Van Allen asteroid belt or whatever, to blow out past the gravitational pull of a stadium, either a stadium full of fans, or in
former fans.
Former fans, yeah. Former fans, former promoters,
right.
former radio DJs, former stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
And in my own life, or in yours, I mean, you are certainly in the process right now of redefining the way you want to be in the world, the kinds of things that you're doing in the world. We can talk a little bit more about that. But you're certainly blasting off out past whole stadia full of people
mm-hmm.
that are comfortable with you in a different role. And that are comfortable with relating to you as a bullfighter.
Well, you also said it when you introduced the story, that that was his identity, and he had a lot of support and power and accolades and lifestyle.
A golden suit and a big red cape and funny mouse ears, the whole deal.
Tight pants.
Tight pants. Leave that to you to notice. You notice those tight pants, huh?
Yeah.
Well, those he kept in it. He kept a tight pants, I think.
But, no, seriously.
He's courageous. He's not a fool. He kept the tight pants.
On the surface, it looked like it was working, and it was working for him until it didn't work for him, until that moment of consciousness. Now, it probably hadn't been working for a long time at an unconscious level, but the courage it takes to give up a blessed life, a privileged life.
A superstar.
Life,
he was a superstar.
A superstar, and to go...
The cover of every magazine.
And just, like, think of the image. A huge ring, a huge auditorium, and all of a sudden he goes as this little man and sits in the corner of the ring.
Yes, that's what happened. There's an image now of him sitting down in the corner of the ring
and
staring into the eyes of this massive tormenting creature, and they're both just sitting there. But what we haven't heard is what was the response of the fans.
Well, even before we get to that, the courage, what I was going to say is, so he's sitting in the corner of the ring, and now he's just in his humanness. He's just a human being. He's not a superstar anymore. And how is, speaking from him, how is my life going to look now as a human being? He has no idea. He has no idea the backlash he's going to get. He has no idea how maybe he's going to support himself, or if he needs to, what friends are going to, his whole community is now going to be a different community, because I'm imagining he was in the bullfight community.
Yeah.
To go for, in that moment, he's been going north, and there wasn't a fork in the road. He made like a U-turn and went off somewhere else.
He went off planet.
Off planet. And the courage to go into the unknown, to know that you have to have the character to respond to that compassion that he felt in that moment at the expense of his life.
Life as he's known it.
And we know that his life is going to be...
Well, we know...
Imagine.
Say we know.
We sense. Yeah.
We hope we know. We want to know.
Based on the rules according to us.
Exactly.
His life is really
according
good
to us, we know, but we don't know anything. We don't know anything. But we're inspired by it. And the us that we are inspired of it is, to me anyway, a sign that there is an invisible trail that he is farther up the trail on, and that I am inspired and I'm uplifted by that action, says to me that there is life outside the orbit, outside the gravity of Earth as I've known it. And this guy has blasted out of it.
Life outside the ring.
Life outside the ring.
Yeah.
So I am thrilled by it, I'm excited by it, and I'm just in awe of the courage that it took for him to step outside that ring. And, you know, this is a show about issues of consciousness and spirituality. And the question is, when I see it played that large, it's interesting around Easter time, right? When I see it played that large, because that was another story played very large. But it's become so institutionalized, that Easter story, that we've lost sight of how big a game that was, what the stakes were. But here's a game, a warrior who lays it down and blasts off and changes his world, and he certainly changed a lot of worlds. What does it take to do that? We will investigate this a little bit more and other things. On the far side of our break, we're going to step aside for a moment, and we're going to pay a few bills and be grateful to the folks that support this show. So we will be right back on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we are back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with my guest co-host, Sandy Stewart. And we were talking before the break about this incredible story of the famous matador who, in mid-fight, decided that he was over it. And more than that, he felt, in his own words, he says, "I felt like," we are not allowed to say that on the air, and he went off to the side of the bull ring, and in the midst of this huge crowded stadium, he sat down, and suddenly from being a rock star and a hero, he became a different kind of a hero, and a different kind of a man of courage. He just sat down on the side of the ring and pondered who he was, and he talks about it with such sorrow and grief, not guilt, but such sorrow and grief for the kind of life that he led at the expense of this of these magnificent animals. And I'm struck, it's not a metaphor, it's a literal example of the kinds of challenges that we face, those of us who are consciously pursuing a life with the intention of blasting off outside the pull of gravity, the gravity of our conditioned values and our conditioned beliefs and other people's stories and other people's television, other people's movies, other people's art, other people's values, other people's religions, and then the web of how all these things interact. They get grounded in a life and in a lifestyle we make. And when we desire to make these huge changes, there are anchors that hold us back. I have to make a living this way, or I have dependence, emotional or physical or financial. And when we really do decide to recognize and to own something and to cut anchor on it, and to blast off or to sail off outside of what has been known, there is the magnitude of the courage that it takes to do that, and the pull of all of our, all of the people with whom we have made a life, either closely and intimately, or who are the witnesses sitting in the stadia, in the bullring of our life, cheering us on and have a vested interest in it being the way it is. What it takes to move in the face of that is so inspiring and also intimidating. We make these little steps, and maybe they're bigger steps than I think they are. Maybe they are very big steps, but when I see that, that is a really big step. And maybe just I'm glamorized with it because I'm a storyteller and I like all the traps, the set and the setting and the trappings and the costumes,
colors.
And the colors and the costumes and the big music.
Very visual.
And the big melodramatic, this is not melodrama, this is and the real dramatic climax and the suggestion of what might come after. It's such a movie for me. Maybe I'm enamored of it for that.
And also because how often do you get a chance to witness someone's transformation in the moment?
In public.
In public, in the moment that they witness it. We witnessed it with him in real time. He didn't come back and talk to us about it.
Yeah, he didn't have a radio show.
Exactly, exactly. So that, I think, is one reason it's so moving to me to witness that.
Yeah, I mean, finally a teacher that I can trust unequivocally. I don't have to listen to. Teachings. I don't have to listen to the perspectives, but I can see it lived out. I mean, the greatest art, the greatest creativity is when our life is owned as a work of art,
mm-hmm.
and when we become artists of the living of our life. And this guy is Michelangelo. mean, that's...
In that moment, it would be interesting
to find
out...
Yeah, he may be Daffy Duck this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to find out where he goes from here. It would be interesting to follow him.
But that's a big crisis. That is a big crisis. It would be, I think, simplistic to assume that he's, as you just said, it'd be interesting to find out where he goes. It's highly unlikely that he's all resolved and all tucked in. But this is a guy in midlife, or a little bit younger, who had a fundamental midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. That wonderful expression from Dante. I'm not showing off now, I swear, but I know this line, so I have to share it.
Okay, go.
Thank you. Midway through my life's journey, I came to a fork in the dark wood, and my way was entirely lost. Mm-hmm. It so perfectly captures the poetry and the pain and the poignancy of what happens when you're, as Joseph Campbell said, you're climbing the ladder of success, and then at some point you realize it's up against the wrong wall. The courage to deal with that. It's messy. So here's a guy in the middle of a huge midlife crisis, up against the wrong wall, and then where do you go? What do? He just stepped out of a life with no safety net and no other life to go into. It's messy.
And maybe it's so moving also because we all can relate in not such a dramatic, large way, but large still for each of us. I mean, I think that change does happen in a moment, but it's a lot of little moments, as you say.
It takes forever to get to the moment when you make the change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And in my own life, I was doing work, for example, for 25 years that I wasn't passionate about. I was very successful, so if I use the metaphor of the bullfighter.
Mm-hmm.
I had the fancy clothes. Mm-hmm. I had the tight pants.
You looked good. You looked better in your tight pants than he looked in his tight pants. But I'm just saying.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. That's the right thing to say.
It is the right thing to say.
Yeah.
But we're on radio, so you're just going to have to trust me.
Okay. But more seriously, I had all the shiny things,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, boy, I'm really supposed to be happy. I'm climbing the ladder, and I'm supposed to be happy. I have all the shiny things, and I have a lot of power. I have a lot of power because these are the things that people in society value.
They value.
And it wasn't one day, but over time, it became more and more apparent. And actually, for me, my body started to tell me I couldn't do this much longer. The older you get, your body says, puts on the brakes. If you're not willing to yourself, and so I had some health awakenings, wonderfully powerful health crisis that said made me have to look at my life and say, I can't deny the truth anymore. I have to look in the bullseye, and I looked
in the bullseye.
Yeah, in the bullseye, right?
Wow, I just got that.
Me too.
We had to look together. We should spend more time together.
But I had to look in the bullseye and get the message, and then have the character to act on the message, which mm-hmm. for me meant changing my life, really moving into the unknown, quitting my job.
And by the way, I just want to add something to around that. In the way that this matador is in some kind of a codependent relationship with his whole fan base. This is a guy who in the middle of this big fight quits the fight mm-hmm. when everybody's down there in the middle of the Super Bowl and the teams walk off the gridiron. People are PO'd. They've got tickets, they've got... So you quit your job, and I am very used to 25, 30 years of a big income coming in and certain kinds of...
Fringe benefits.
I still get some fringe benefits, but certain other fringe benefits are not there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shock.
Yeah. And So what what comes up for me when you say that is my responsibility and who am I letting down? Can I nurture myself at the expense of others? But but luckily I had my health to tell me I had no choice, because I don't know if I would have found the character on my own. But I found the character quickly when I got into fear. And
when you got past fear.
When I got past fear. I wasn't, that's true.
Fear tends to keep us in the bull ring.
Yeah, that's true. When I got past the fear. I was in the fear of the health, but past
you
the fear of
the
I got into the real fear.
If I stay in the bull ring, if I stay in the bull ring.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose more surely than the bull.
Yes, and also having to look at, boy, I really liked that power. And I liked being able to provide fringe benefits for my loved ones, because if I did that, well, then of course I'm going to be loved.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you're going to love me. I mean, why wouldn't you love me? I'm contributing so much to your lifestyle, etc. But that, you know, I had to also bust and ask myself, do I believe I'm lovable without that? And clearly, for a long time, I didn't.
Yeah.
For a long time, I didn't.
Yeah.
And then finally,
believe
I did.
Me, when we're looking for our car in the parking lot of the bullring, and there's been no bullfight, it's nobody feels loved. Everybody feels agitated.
I don't
agitated.
Understand that.
I don't know. It was a weird metaphor.
For my
it was
car?
It was a weird metaphor. It didn't
when
really
you said
work.
That, I thought about the time we lost our car in Siena outside the walled city.
Do you remember
I
that?
That's where we're going. But don't go there now.
We won't
I thought
go there.
That's where
that was similar.
Okay.
Metaphor didn't work, so.
So I'm going to segue back
too
to being on
track. Too bad
this
is live, because we'll never be able to cut that out.
But anyway.
You know what? Perfectionism is the buzzkill of creativity.
Of course.
Nice save.
Yeah, good.
Almost.
Good. Anyway, so everything that I had known had to fall away. And all I was left with was me and really looking at the insecurities, what I had allowed that work and that power to cover up that I didn't want to look at.
Yes.
And there, and then I was stripped naked. I was really taken to my knees. And it was a crisis. Come on, just stay on topic here. I saw
and
that little smirk. I said, stripped naked.
She was on her naked and on her knees.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's only been 32
falling
years.
Falling apart, Barnett. Okay. No, it's serious. Back to the eyes of the bull. I mean, the bullseye. Because it is really hard to change your life, even if you're not happy. It's really, really hard, and I can't look at you because you're laughing at me. Oh my gosh, we can't get the giggles.
Here, let's just sleep on other sides of the bed, opposite sides of the bed.
Okay.
I will look way. You look that way,
because
I want you to finish this thought.
It is serious, and it was a real challenge for me.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I just had to say, I have enough. I've had enough, and I'm going to take the chance to find out, am I really lovable? And what do I want my passion? What are my passions? When I ask myself, what is my dream? What do I want for my dream? The answer was, well, when our daughter does this or accomplishes this, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, then I'll be happy.
Yep.
When my husband, Barnett, accomplishes this, da-da-da-da-da, then I'll be happy. And the more I listened to the answer to the question, what is your dream, Sandy, I realized I had no dream outside, and I was looking to you and to our daughter to live lives big enough to fulfill my dream, and then I was willing to sacrifice my life in order to be loved, and the whole thing was upside down and inside out. And I had to begin for the first time in my life at probably 59, I'm 60 now, but at 59, to start generating a dream for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really scary, because here I was, this successful woman in the world, looking very independent, very together, and if you weren't together, or our daughter wasn't together, then I wasn't together.
Yeah.
How independent and successful was I?
Yeah.
So that was my bullseye.
This is an enormous agitator.
Cool.
It's an enormous agitator. It's really like looking into a mirror that so dramatically plays back certainly my own personal values, your personal values, and holds them up for analysis and for scrutiny in the most powerful and dramatic way. And I see Barry waving his, are we all cooked? The whole show is over?
No, we've got another segment, right?
Thank goodness. So we do need a commercial. Sam, because we share everything, I want to share the airtime. Why don't you just let our viewer, our audience know that we will be right back after these words.
Well, you just did, honey.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we are back. This is Barnett Bain with my co-host and my partner, my real-life partner, Sandy Stewart. And we've been talking about this very, very dramatic development, the matador, Torero Alvaro Munera, who renounced the sport in the middle of what became his last fight, obviously. Just right in the middle of it. He had a fundamental shift in perception and in values and responsibility. And we have been discussing what a dramatic mirror that is for our own evolution and our own development individually and collectively, and admiring and marveling at the not only the insight and the wisdom that it takes to recognize and to acknowledge and to own and where we've been, but the courage and the vision that it was required to take action in the face of all of the heritage attachments, all of the fans, all of the co-conspirators, whether it's in the bull ring, and as you were saying, San, in our own life, you were talking about stepping out of your own ring of comfortable, though not always happy, but familiar habits and lifestyle and having the courage and the willingness to step out of it and to explore something absolutely new. And even that ruffled some feathers from some folks in the stands, including yours truly. I certainly never shouted for my money back to the bullfight, but I did feel the unease of when two people are engaged in a relationship, and that manner of relating shifts because one of them no longer chooses to fight the bull, then it actually shifts for everyone, not just the bullfighter and the bull, but all of the fans and all the ticket takers and everybody else. And when you made that shift, it had impact on me, positive impact, because it allowed me to see, well, what's going on for me? Well, it's going to represent, amongst other things, a change in my lifestyle. But does that have to be a change in my lifestyle? Well, it means that I now have to take a little more personal responsibility to fill what I perceive as the gaps. It is not a given that other people spackle over the gaps in the little missing areas in your bandwidth. It affords us the opportunity to see where we have dropouts in our bandwidth and to fill them ourselves. But that is a hugely disruptive, empowering, if we choose to go down that road, but disruptive nonetheless. It's a disruptive action that changes fundamentally the relationship of the prime actor and everybody involved with that prime actor. A lot of words to say something that I'm trying to figure out on the fly.
Well, I think also where we left off was, I was interested in where the bullfighter's life will go from here. after having that courage and the character to make to let everything fall away, the life that he had known fall away. And as I said, I had to let the life, I had to, for my own emotional, spiritual, physical survival, let the life I know fall away, and really not know if I would be loved in the same way if I was provided, if I was providing less, and also not knowing at my age
where you were going to go,
where I was going to go, and if I even knew how to create. I knew how to consciously create a spiritual life for myself, but my physical life, there was a disconnect mm-hmm. between my physical life and my spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted everything to begin to line. I wanted everything to begin to line up, and I understood it was necessary for me for everything to begin to line up. So, what is my dream? That's a big question. And as a wife, and as a mother, and as a female, there was a lot of, I would say, generational
legacy
and gender prejudice that I had against myself. As I noticed, women don't really get it. Don't have to really dream for themselves. The men dream, and the women support the men in their dream. So even though I was in the world, as I said, with a lot of success and power, my motivation was to do all that so I could support your dream and so you could do and be anything you wanted to
so
be.
So this kind of, these are attitudes, these sort of these chauvinistic attitudes, they are not gender specific. They cross both genders.
Right.
Males and females alike have bitten of the same apple.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all
in agreement with the
story.
Yeah.
We're all in a story. We're all infatuated with a particular kind of will and action at the expense of connection, emoting, feeling, imagining, that are perceived as weaker, feminized. They have a whole kind of bristle to them, and where our culture devalues them, men and women alike.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I did begin to ask the question every day, and actually I began to ask for help. Mm-hmm. I asked before I went to sleep and in the morning when I woke up, show me my dream, lead me to my dream life. I asked consciously, I want to find my dream life. And through a number of circumstances, I was led to discovering a new kind of therapy that I had never, ever even heard of. And it's called...
And we've done one or two therapies.
Yeah, I'd say we've been around that block a few times. And I found one I'd never heard of, which was pretty interesting. IBP, Integrative Body Psychotherapy. And the more I learned and studied this type of therapy, the more I understood that in the past I'd been doing a lot of therapy where I talked and talked and talked and talked and talked and I knew everything about my story and I could tell my story beautifully, but I couldn't make the changes that I wanted to make. All I was doing was becoming more aware of my story, but I knew where I wanted to be, but I couldn't make the change.
Mm-hmm.
And inviting my body into participating in this through integrative body psychotherapy, I learned, I found so many emotions that were locked in the body, once they were released, I could actually make the changes. So this was so exciting to me.
And me too. I was so excited watching you for...
I think after my third session,
so dramatic. I have to tell everybody, that all our listeners, it was so dramatic, the changes that were going on, that like watching this bullfighter just surrender the cape.
Surrender.
I saw you surrender the cape. And it was so dramatic that nothing needed to be said. I just thought, I want that. And so I also began to work with this kind of therapy.
And yeah, I think it was after the third session you said, "I don't know what you're doing, but I want some of that."
And then after,
and to your credit, you went and got some.
I did. I went and got some, and I'm still doing it, and it's very, very powerful. It's very powerful. It's I can't speak enough to how powerful it is, and at some point we should come back and we'll do a whole show about
that would
IVP.
Be great.
But where I want to steer this is, you were pursuing this, and then one day you came home, and you were so lit over a session that you said, "What?
I want to know everything there is to know about this. I could do this. I want to study this and have a credential to be this type of therapist." And that was a huge, huge leap for me.
And now you've gone back to school. You're a schoolgirl.
I've gone back to school. I'm in a 3-year course.
I pack apples for her and lunch.
Uh-huh. And now I do feel like I'm living a dream. And that activity has led me to another activity. I'm writing a book with 2 other women, and we're planning workshops around the book. And it is a book for women, 3 women who have been in the workplace and playing very masculine roles, mm-hmm. in the workplace, mm-hmm. at the expense of our feminine intuition and power, mm-hmm. and who are rediscovering our feminine intuition and power, and really going to ask a couple of questions about what do we need as women to say goodbye to have the sensual, full, fun life we really want to have and deserve. It just keeps coming back to me, that hair color ad, you know, because you're worth it. You know, we've really got to learn that we're worth it, and I'm just beginning to learn I'm worth it, and the more I know I'm worth it, the more wonderful things are being gifted to me.
Yeah, you're inspiring. You're definitely inspiring. You are... You're a reformed matadoress.
Yeah. Or the bull, I'm not sure.
I would not be the one on air to say that you're a reformed bull-ess. But you are definitely an inspiration and a map maker. You're definitely creating, drawing new maps. Somebody said to me, was it your friend Kathleen who said to me, told me the story about a Roman, some Roman soldier, apocryphal story obviously, who writes back to Rome and says, send instructions, I've gone off the map.
Oh.
I love that story, but I would reframe it. I mean, when it comes to you, it's it would be, stand by, I'm drawing a new map. Stand by for instructions, I'm drawing a brand new map.
Yeah, and I really don't know where the map is going, but I do know moment to moment I'm more present, more alive, more fulfilled, and happier than I've ever been. And that in itself is the destination.
Yeah, the world kind of rises up to support you, really support us. The farther off the territory, the farther out of the ring we go, the more the world kind of rises up to support us in this new place.
And also, I have just a little example. Mm. The more each of us lives in our passion, mm-hmm. and lives in our integrity and walks away from the bull and sees the bullseye, the more impact we have that we have in the world. We change the world by changing ourselves. And very quickly, the other night, you said something to me, you were angry with me, you said something to me, and our daughter was with us, our 24, almost year-old daughter, and you said something to me, and that I had hurt you in some way, something that I said. And you walked into the room, I said to our daughter, hey, I need a reality check. I'm not reading it that way. Did mm-hmm. you read it that way? She said, no, not at all. I went back in the room. You were still in your kind of dark place. I came out. She said to me, what is it? I said, you know, I don't know. It's his tar pit, and I'm not jumping in. The next day, she's on the phone with her significant other, and she gets off the phone, and I can see she's agitated, and I said, what's going on? She goes, you know, Mom, I don't know, but it's her stuff, it's not mine, and I'm not taking it on. Now, I've been trying to teach her that by telling it to her for about 10 years, but when I finally started to live it, and she saw it, she got the lesson,
that's
and
beautiful.
She was able to do
it. Yeah, that was wonderful. And so happy to be in my tar pit for a good purpose. So happy that it added up
it just
to something.
It was your turn, that's all.
It added up to something besides wallowing around in that sticky stuff, that hot sticky stuff. It's been an incredible, conversation. I love this talk.
Me too.
What's wonderful about this talk is we get to leave the radio station, get in the car, continue the talk.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is sort of the talk. This is sort of our 24/7
conversation,
isn't it?
Mm-hmm. We're a little better behaved on the radio, I must say, but it's pretty close.
It is pretty close. I'm not sure if Barry's holding up one or two fingers over there.
Yeah.
One finger. Does that mean we have one more minute left on the show, Does that mean we could stretch? Are we stretching or are we collapsing?
You can take as long as you like.
I can, because I never get this time thing done. There's a clock here, and it keeps absolutely perfect, correct time twice every 24 hours. So I never know exactly what's going on.
I'd suggest about a minute or so.
We have a whole minute.
Yeah, you do.
Anything that you want to wrap up with, Sam?
No, I feel pretty complete, other than thank you so much for inviting me. And I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Well, I can't wait to have you back. This was a lot of fun. And I think we're going to do a whole family thing of it, because I'm going to have Sophie on at some point, too. We're going to have the same kind of discussion from the perspective of a soon-to-be 24-year-old girl who has a lot of wisdom to share from that vantage point. It's, you know, I don't even remember what it was like to be 24 years old. It's another species.
Mm-hmm.
And she is an exotic and glamorous species, and I'm thrilled to see that she still wafts through our house from time to time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have to say, I really enjoy you, and you know I always think that you're brilliant and love your mind. But for some reason, you are even more brilliant with a microphone in front of your face. It's such a good look.
I'm going to try and remember that at the dinner table.
Yeah, right. Bring one in.
I think maybe I'll just bring a studio mic up over at dinner table.
It helps. It's very deep. Good luck.
I have to just say, but I know we're running out of time now, but we had... sounds like we're always arguing, doesn't it?
Another argument.
We had another argument about
32
something.
Years. You know.
32 years, you have one or two.
Yeah.
I don't know who was in the tar pit at that point, but it was a heavy slogging argument. And then Sandy is later out. She's out driving, and she's comes home and she says, "You know, I was driving and I was listening to this guy on the radio, and he was." It was similar to what we were talking about, and he was so good. And it was almost like I was so disconnected and out of myself because I didn't realize it was you. But I have to tell you that you made a lot more sense on the radio than you do in the living room. So I thank you for that endorsement of sorts. It's been really a pleasure to be with you, Sam. Thank you for coming in. I want to thank everybody in their vehicles and on their or on the podcast, however you're listening to this show. Thank you all. If you enjoyed the conversation, please feel free to share it as a podcast. And you can come visit us at our website, www.cuttingedgeconsciousness.com, or our Facebook page, We Love to Be Loved. So really, I guess there is no love button, but there's a like button, and please like us. We like to be liked.
I like you.
Thank God you like me. Until next week, thank you so much. Have a great week.